right, so I know you're all on a very tight schedule. It's like the Academy Awards when your speech is up, the music plays, and the hook comes. So I'll get right to the point. This is text number one of Canto 1? What canto are we in?
Yeah, first
canto, chapter...
16.
I have the Vedavase printout.
16.
Chapter 16?
16,
text number 1. And I'll do the Sanskrit, a little bit of Sanskrit. Everyone can repeat, and then we'll get right to the translation and purport. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Sutu Vacha. Tathak. Padik. Do you do that way? Word for word?
Okay.
Parikshid,
Vija,
Varya,
Shikshaya,
Mahim,
Maha,
Bhagavata,
Shashasha,
Ha,
Yata,
Hi,
Sucham,
Abhijata,
Kovida,
Samadishan,
Vipra,
Mahad,
Ganas,
Tata. All right, I'll chant the verse, and I know you're all spoiled because there's so many academic and scholarly devotees here that I'm sure you'll hear classes from on a regular basis, and I am not one of those people. So just that's a disclaimer when I do the Sanskrit here. I'll chant it, and then everybody else can chant the verse. Sutu Vacha. Tathak parikshid vija varya sikshaya. Mahim maha bhagavatak shashashaha. Yatahi sucham abhijata kovida. Samadisham vipra mahadgunas tata. Anybody? Bless you. Parikshit vija varya sikshaya. Mahim maha bhagavata shashaha. Yatahi suchama bijadata kovida. Samadhi Shan Vipra Mahad Gunas Tata. Tathak Parikshit Vijay Varya Dikshaya. Mahi Maha Bhagavata Shashashaha. Tathahi Suchama Vichata Kovida. Samadhi Shan Vipra Mahad Gunas Tata. Tathak Parikshit Vija Vaya Siksha. Mahi Maha Bhagavata Shashasaha. Yatahi Suchama Vijata Kovida. Samadhi Shan Vipra Mahat Ganastata. Do word for word? You do? Okay. Word for word? Sutu Vacha.
Sutu
Goswami
said.
Tata. Thereafter. Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit.
Vija
Varya. The great twice born Brahmanas, Shikshaya, by their instructions, Mahim, the earth,
Mahabhagavata,
the great devotee, Shashasha. Ruled. Ha. In the past. Yata. As they told it. He. Certainly. Sujam. At the time of his birth. Abhijata Kovida. Expert astrologers at the time of birth. Samadhishan. Gave their opinions. Vipra. O Brahmanas. Mahatguna. Great qualities. Tata. True to that. Translation. I'll say part of it, repeat, and then I'll read the whole thing. Suta Goswami said, O learned Brahmanas, Maharaj Pariksit then began to rule over the world as a great devotee of the Lord. Under the instructions of the best of the twice-born Brahmanas. He ruled by those great qualities, which were foretold by expert astrologers at the time of his birth. Okay, there's a purport by Srila Prabhupada, and it's a little long, so I will read it quickly because I love Srila Prabhupada's purports, and anything that Prabhupada said in his purport is far better and more beneficial and auspicious than anything I could possibly say. So, at the time of Maharaj Pariksit's birth, the expert astrologer Brahmanas foretold some of his qualities. Maharaj Pariksit developed all of those qualities, being a great devotee of the Lord. The real qualification is to become a devotee of the Lord, and gradually all the good qualities worthy of possession develop. Maharaj Pariksit was a Mahabhagavat, or first-class devotee, who was not only well-versed in the science of devotion, but also able to convert others to become devotees by his transcendental instructions. Maharaj Pariksit was, therefore, a devotee of the first order, and thus he used to consult great sages and learned brahmanas who could give advice to him by the shastras how to execute the state administration. Such great kings were more responsible than modern elected executive heads. And of course, as we all know, we're in the middle of a so-called political season has started. So this is rather timely in terms of a comparison between what we see out there today and a great devotee such as Maharaj Pariksit. There was no need for impractical fools to enact daily a new legislative bill and to conveniently alter it again and again to serve some purpose. See, Prabhupada's writing all this stuff. He knows, he's predicting, he's just like analyzing society so accurately. And I'll give you a little anecdote about that in a minute. The rules and regulations were already set forth by great sages like Mano, Jagyavalkya, Parasha, and other liberated sages, and the enactments were all suitable for all ages in all places, not temporary for some Wall Street bailout. Therefore, the rules and regulations were standard and without flaw or defect. Kings like Maharaj Pariksit had their council of advisors, and all the members of that council were either great sages or brahmanas of the first order. They did not accept any salary, nor had they any necessity for such salaries. The state would get the best advice without expenditure, underscored by Srila Prabhupada. They were themselves samadarshi, equal to everyone, both man and animal. They would not advise the king to give protection to man and instruct him to kill the poor animals. Such counsel, another very relevant and contemporary issue of animal rights, which I have some involvement in, which I may talk about or may not, I don't know yet. Such council members were not fools or representatives to compose a fool's paradise. They were all self-realized souls, and they knew perfectly well how all living beings in the state would be happy, both in this life and in the next. They were not concerned with the hedonistic philosophy of eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy. They were philosophers in the real sense, and they knew well what is the mission of human life. All these obligations, the advisory council of the king would give correct directions, and the king or executive head, being himself a qualified devotee of the Lord, would scrutinizingly follow them for the welfare of the state. The state in the days of Maharaj Yudhisthira or Maharaj Parikshit was a welfare state in the real sense of the term, because no one was unhappy in that state, be he man or animal. Maharaj Parikshit was an ideal king for a welfare state of the world. Sutta Goswami said, O learned Brahmanas, Maharaj Parikshit then began to rule over the world as a great devotee of the Lord under the instructions of the best of the twice-born Brahmanas. He ruled by those great qualities which were foretold by expert astrologers at the time of his birth. So Kalakanta told me he handpicked this verse because we've known each other 35, 40 years, how long ever it is. He was a great preacher. I mean, he is a great preacher. I didn't mean that. But what I meant was in his previous service, he would go to colleges and colleges. He was on what was called the library party, and they would travel to the colleges, meeting the professors and getting the books in the college libraries and cultivating college students. So he knows exactly, what my interest is and so forth. He knows. He's just very expert in knowing what people want and in giving them that. So he sort of handpicked this because he knows that that I have a very strong interest in politics. It's just kind of like genetic, in a sense. And I've had a lot of my service here in Gainesville and some other places involved political preaching or preaching in the political arena, and I do follow these campaigns very carefully. Everybody has their vices. That's one of mine. And yesterday at the Lachua Farm, interestingly, we were talking about the Putana demon and how she disguised herself as a nursemaid and walked right into the assembly of devotees, Mother Yasoda, Nanda Maharaj, all the cowherd men and women, and everyone was so attached to Krishna, yet her mystical power was so powerful that she turned herself into this nursemaid, even though her real form was this hideous creature, and walked right up to Krishna and picked him up with the intent to assassinate him, to poison him with her breast milk. And, of course, that backfired on her, and then all the cowherd men and chopped her up in little pieces and burned her. And so we were talking about snakes, and there's different kinds of snakes. And, of course, in Florida, where I grew up, there's lots of different kinds that crawl on the ground. And whether or not you have to chop them up and burn them or they'll come back to life is, I think, somewhat superstitious. But the point is that with the human snakes, we really do have to chop them up and burn them so that they don't come back to life. And, of course, that should not be interpreted in any other way but a philosophical comment, not a threat in this day and age. But Maharaj Parikshit was he is one of our heroes. Prior to him, Maharaj Yudhisthira, Arjuna, the five Pandava brothers, even going back to the Vivashwan, the sun god, there is a long line that Krishna originally spoke the Bhagavad Gita to a Kshatriya. And, of course, the Vivashwan, the sun god, as he says in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And then later on, when the knowledge was lost and the disciplic succession was broken, which happens periodically, and irreligiosity predominates everywhere, as we can witness ourselves in this modern day and age, he appears. And so he came back 5,000 years ago. And what did he do? Well, he arranged this big war between the Pandavas and the Kauravas, between Duryodhana and those who were dedicated to material development of the planet, as opposed to the Kshatriya devotees such as Arjuna. Arjuna was Krishna's friend. He was a Kshatriya. He wasn't a guru. He wasn't a great sannyasi or something of that, or a sage or a brahmana. So it's significant that Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita for our benefit, of course, to Arjuna. And so every year, every 4 years, when all of these political campaigns get started and we hear everything that they talk about, and then compare that to the priorities of the Rajarsis or the Vedic politicians, and they were politicians, as there are politicians today. When I was in Dallas in 1972, our political preaching program, Prabhupada was when he used to travel in the late 60s, early 70s, his secretary, Shyamasundar Prabhu, who was a very, very old and senior devotee, would travel with Prabhupada, and he would write letters to all the temples, keep a diary, and send the temples all over the world. Prabhupada was here. Prabhupada said this. Prabhupada met with this minister. He was met with many politicians, and he would never mince words. He would never try to be diplomatic. He would just tell them very directly that this is what you have to do. You have to stop this animal slaughter, which is mentioned in this verse, and which is one of Maharaj Pariksit's famous pastimes, because in the course of his administration, prior to that time, animal slaughter was unthinkable. It was just inconceivable that a Kshatriya would allow an animal to be slaughtered, especially a cow, because life comes from life. And I don't like to criticize other religions or denigrate them, and I don't intend to do that. When Prabhupada was here in Gainesville in 1971, there was a moderator over at the campus TV station that we were friendly with, and when he heard that Prabhupada was coming, he was bugging me day and night. We got to get Prabhupada over here for an interview on his program. His name was Mark Damon. And there's a little booklet called Transcendental Broadcast, which is very rare. I do happen to have a copy of it. I don't know how many copies of it are in circulation. But that was a transcription of Prabhupada's interview with this campus moderator or journalist. And so in the interview, he kept trying to get Prabhupada to criticize other religions. And he tried to keep baiting Prabhupada to say something controversial that would turn up in the newspaper the next day. Leader of Krishna says Christians are demons and going to burn in hell. Our Krishnas are superior and all other religions are a waste of time. He kept trying to get Prabhupada, bait Prabhupada to say something. Prabhupada just would not take the bait. And he was cutting this interviewer to pieces in the interview. And the devotees, it was late at night, as a matter of fact, after he had spoken on the plaza that afternoon. And then came back for a little rest in the afternoon afterwards. Then we went to the TV station. There were about 30 devotees. It was very intimate, sitting behind the cameras. And Prabhupada was in the spotlights of the TV cameras. And every time he would get a zinger in, some kind of zinger, where he knew he had, just really hit this guy with a beautiful comment or response to one of his ulterior motivated questions, Prabhupada would kind of just like, he knew we were there, obviously, And he had a little sparkle in his eye, and out of the corner of his eye, you look over at the devotees, and he kind of like smile a little bit, you know. And all the devotees, you know, he wouldn't do a big smile like, I've just cut you to pieces, and you don't even know it. And that's how Prabhupada would do it. I mean, it was one of those interviews, and Prabhupada's response was, says, no, we do not say our religion is the best. We say whatever religion you are, follow that religion. Just follow. If you're a devotee of Jesus Christ, Christ said, thou shalt not kill. So why are you killing? And in this verse, it's made very clear that a Rajarshi, under the guidance of the Brahmanas, who took no pay and therefore had no vested interest in the outcome of any particular issue, in a letter that I got from Prabhupada in 1971, long before Watergate, he said, these politicians are simply pickpockets. They just tell people what they want to hear, and then they pick their pocket and take the money and put it in their own pockets. And if you ever think about it, how is it that these politicians go into office and their net worth may be $100,000, and 2 or 4 or 8 years later they become multimillionaires? Where are they getting that money? How are they getting that money? So Prabhupada went on to say, you should expose these Nixons and replace them. And this came from Africa, from Shyama Sundar. Not that. That came in a letter that I got from Prabhupada when I asked him, in response to a letter that Shyama Sundar had said, and Prabhupada quoted Prabhupada in Africa, that our devotees should enter into politics. That I said, well, I happened to be not famous, but notorious prior to that in a very controversial way on campus, where I obviously spent a number of years getting my degree. It took me a little longer because I had outside interests beyond the classroom. And it was interesting because I was in a college fraternity that used to be very powerful. It's not so powerful anymore. Top Ceylon Phi. And at the time I became a devotee, I joined the movement. One of my fraternity brothers, president of the student body. Another was the editor of the Alligator. Another one was the chairman of chancellor of the Honor Court. And another one was chairman of the Speakers Bureau, Accent. So Ronnie, I can't remember. I remember the era of the Alligator, Ronnie Sachs, because it became very controversial later on for some other issues. But I went to him and I said, well, we asked Prabhupada to come to Gainesville, and I said, well, Prabhupada said, he said if they will pay me some money, I will come and speak. So because I knew all these people from my college, does that guy look familiar? I don't recognize him. I'm not sure he was. This is Parma Karuna, in case you don't know who he is. And his claim to fame is he was the first devotee kid ever born in Gainesville. Born in Gainesville. At what used to be called the Alachua General Hospital. And I do remember the date he was born, 1976, which is, I made a point of trying to remember that so he wouldn't get upset. But he was the first devotee born in Gainesville. And Prabhupada wrote this letter that my disciples should, you know, my devotees, we should enter into politics. So in 1971, having had this already a lot of political involvement of a rather controversial type in the 60s, on campus when Gainesville was I know it's a wild place in a different way now. I'm certainly out of touch with what goes on downtown every night when 25,000 students hit the bars and the shot glasses and everything else. It wasn't quite that way. In those days, the plaza was the hangout, and everybody would congregate there and plot ways to take over this building, have a strike, do this, do that. So I became somewhat well known for some not so Brahminical activities. So when I became a devotee, that kind of mellowed me out somewhat. But when Prabhupada gave this instruction about going into politics, it just, you know, Prabhupada will satisfy, Krishna will satisfy all your desires. Even though you may think, oh, I have all these desires to do this and material desires to do that. Actually, by just becoming Krishna conscious, all of your desires, both spiritual and material, will ultimately be satisfied. So I was, you know, a political-oriented person, and when I read this letter, I immediately, from Shyamasundar, I immediately was clicked. I said, oh, this, I can't believe this. And so in 1971, I ran for the city commission. As a Hare Krishna devotee with robe, shaved head, tilak, the whole nine yards. And the government has what's called a fairness doctrine under the rules of the Federal Communications Committee that all candidates have to get equal time. So I had access to every engagement and every media program. And so I would go there, and they would say, well, I'm going to fix this pothole, and I'll get you money for the new science building and this and that and all these promises that they make that they never keep, because that money ultimately goes, as I said, into their pockets in one way or the other. And so I did. I ran for the city council, and I didn't get very many votes at that time. But it was, shocked everybody, because one minute I'm got a big afro and I'm out there getting arrested for this, that, and this, and then I'm out there with a shaved head and a bunch of robes. And that was one of the ways in which we became quite well known in the city. Of course, the Prashadam program was the heart and soul. It was always the heart and soul, because we were giving to show them what Vedic culture is really like. Give them, we're going to give you. And Prabhupada told me, he told me in a letter, said, but keep our platform very simple, that regularly all of the people should come together and have kirtan and chant Hare Krishna, and then afterwards there should be the sumptuous distribution of Krishna, or there should be the massive distribution of sumptuous Krishna prasadam. That was my political platform. And that's what I went. And I went to a forum. I said, don't listen to all these fools and rascals. They're just going to cheat you. And the real thing is we have to become God conscious. I had no fear. I wasn't looking for votes in those days. And I would just give them our philosophy about politics and leaders of society and their obligations of society. And even though I didn't get many votes, I got a lot of attention. And I would send the newspaper clippings to Prabhupada. And that's when Prabhupada wrote me back that letter. He was very happy to see that we weren't watering anything down or making any compromises and preaching the philosophy as it is. And that's when he said, Arjuna was a politician, you know, the Pandavas were politicians, it's okay what you're doing, I can see that you're doing it. But he, at the same time, in letters, he would always warn us. He said, but this is a very filthy atmosphere. Politics, we have our politician, our real politician today is here to support me, prop me up, give me more support, Brahmatirtha Prabhu. He is gone far beyond anything I could have imagined in real preaching and real political Vaishnava activity in the city. I mean, he knows everybody. He can pull all the strings, everything. He is the real politician. I was just an imitation politician compared to him. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but it is a, you know, when I was talking about the snakes yesterday, I said, well, you know, there's a lot of snakes out here. And I grew up in Florida, and I never saw a snake. Of course, I never killed a snake. And, you know, I'm not Haridas Thakur, who lived with one in a cave and didn't even kill a snake. But it does say in the Bhagavatam that of all creatures, it's okay to kill a snake because they are so envious. That's why they take birth as snakes. So when I first moved to Florida in 1950, I moved to Miami. Our house was a mile from the Everglades. Today, my house that I lived in there would be 80 or 100 miles from the Everglades because they've drained the Everglades and they've put in subdivision after shopping centers and it goes all the way down the Everglades and they wonder why the Everglades are drying up and how they're going to save it because there's no Vedic planning. There's, what's that?
He's asking what is the Everglades.
Oh, that's a... It's. I'll tell you, technically the Everglades, there's an underwater river that runs under the state of Florida. There's a, the springs, the Ichitaki River, it comes up from underground. It's crystal clear and it's pure. It stays the same temperature every year, and you can drink it right out of the spring. Today, I don't know. In those days, there was nobody out there. We had it all to ourselves. We go out to the Gainesville Shopping Center, as it was called it that day, that's now Lowe's. And myself and my wife Gayatri and Mahavir, who I don't know if you've met or not, we would go out all day and do sankirtan in the lot in the summer, and then we'd go out to the springs in the afternoon and jump in to cool off, and nobody was there. It was just empty. Go down to Ichitaki, go to Post Springs, Blue Springs, anywhere. It was just empty. And there were snakes. We could see snakes, and when I saw a snake, like any strong, courageous Kshatriya, I would turn and run as fast as I could the other way. But of course, I said I only know one devotee that ever got bit by a snake because we had Prashadam. We had our biggest festival was the Govardhan Puja Festival. And we were over on Depot Avenue at that time, and we had a big eucalyptus tree, a huge, beautiful eucalyptus tree. And we have Govardhan Puja Festival every year. Now, there were two reasons for that festival. Number one, to promote the prasadam distribution. And it was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of students would come. It was a very popular festival. I mean, it was huge. And because we were distributing the prasadam on the plaza, and we said, oh, we're going to have this. If you think this is something, you come to the Govardhan Puja. Because in Govardhan Puja, you have prasadam is the main way that you celebrate Govardhan Puja. So that was the main reason. But the other reason was I grew up in Florida. And by that time, I think I had bought we had bought the farm out in Alachua. We bought that farm. And I don't want to say anything politically controversial, but the way we bought that farm is because book distribution was it had just been exploding all over ISKCON. And we had airports, we had the rest areas, we had the welcome stations, we had Orlando and Jacksonville, and we were just making so much money. Without a congregation, without having to go to life members and rich Indians and so forth, we just had $40,000-$50,000 sitting in the bank. We had Depot Avenue, which, we were buying so much sour cream and ghee for the prasadam. That was my special recipe. Just make it any way you want. And you put enough ghee and sour cream in it, everybody's going to love it. Everybody will enjoy it. So we had to send a special van to Jacksonville to get these cases of butter and sour cream to last for a week to make all the prasadam that we were distributing. So that was the main reason that we made Govardhan Puja a major festival, was to, again, promote the prasadam, because the idea was that the reputation of the movement in those days was because the book distribution had become so prominent, that give us a donation. See a Hare Krishna, what did a Hare Krishna mean? Oh, they're going to ask for money. They didn't really know that we're out there distributing Prabhupada's books. We're selling books, and we're asking for donations for the books. And that's why we're really out there, and the money was just to cover the cost of the books and keep the BBT operating. But we made so much profit from that activity and had all this money, so we drove all over North Florida looking for a piece of land, and it was the middle of a drought, one of the worst droughts in decades, and out there in 235, there was a piece of land, and I looked at it, and there was a big cornfield out back, and it was growing, and the corn was 12 feet high, and there was a pond, and there was water on the land, and it looked like good soil, and I said, well, if there's a war and we ever need to go somewhere and support ourselves or sustain ourselves, we can go out there and grow food and have cows, and when everything else falls apart, we'll have a way to maintain ourselves. And if there's nothing like that happens, then the land will go up in value eventually. And if we want, we can sell it and make money. Or if the devotees want to go out there that have that propensity, they can go out there and they can grow watermelons and okra and things that we, little gardens that we had at the time. But that was bought on the basis of the profits that we made from distributing Prabhupada's books that Krishna was giving us. And at the same time, all the other money we had, we would put into the Prasadam program because we wanted to show the community that we're not just here to take something from you. We're giving you something that is the most valuable thing that we could possibly give you. And the way we're going to convince you of that is you come to the plaza every day and you eat this prasadam. And we had a great kirtan leader, a devotee named Shankarshan Das, who's now president of Austin, or has been president of Austin. He would, just one little story. One day we had a truck, because all the vans were on traveling Sankirtan. The truck broke down. We had no way to get the prasadam out to the plaza. And like now, the students would be waiting for us. Nothing even closely on the level of the program now. 100, maybe 150 at the most. But they were dedicated and addicted to prasadam. And this devotee, Shankarshan, was so dedicated to not disappointing them that he got a wheelbarrow. And he loaded all the bins in the wheelbarrow, and I'll never forget that picture of him running down the street with the wheelbarrow full of prasadam to get to the plaza on time so that the students wouldn't be disappointed.
That was about a mile and a half away.
Yeah, it was about a mile and a half. And he ran the whole way. He couldn't, because we were late, and he was running. So, well, we got to go. And the rest of us went, and we followed him, and he wheeled the wheelbarrow out there, and in that way we wanted to show the students that we're here to give you the most valuable thing that you will ever get in your entire life, which is spiritual knowledge and ultimately liberation, saintliness and advancement of Kalakanta Prabhu, he has revived that spirit. He has turned a massive prasadam distribution program, and he's added another layer to it, which was the real originating purpose to begin with, was to cultivate the students and get them to the temple and to bring them in, because Prabhupada said we should go after the intelligent class of men. And so the other thing that we had, the Govardhan Pooj festivals, we had this farm, and there was some swampy land out there, and there's a devotee by the name of Akinchana Krishna. I don't know if any of you know who he is. He joined in 74 or 75, and he's expert in snakes. And so what I recommended yesterday on the Putana story, cutting the snake into pieces and burning it, I said, if you really want to know, just ask Kinchana, because he's our resident acharya on snakes. And there were a lot of snakes on the farm and in those days. And so I said, well, and it's also said, if you worship Govardhan Hill, then that will protect you from dangerous snakes. So I said, okay, so we'll get this other little benefit out of the festival as well. But, of course, Maharaj Pariksha, he wouldn't even kill a snake. I mean, a devotee won't even kill a snake, even though it's authorized, because he won't kill any living entity. Life comes from life. And the defect of the Christian philosophy, getting back to Prabhupada's lecture at the TV station, where he would not take the bait and say, oh, the Christians are this Christians. He just said, thou shalt not kill. And the whole justification for animal slaughter by Christianity is the animals have no soul. They don't have a soul. And therefore, it is okay to slaughter them. And this is just completely false. And if the Bhagavatam and the Rajarsis, the saintly kings, they knew these things, that every living entity, the soul is in there. It's the same soul that you and I have, the same soul that every living entity, advanced or animal or whatever it may be, has the same soul. It's just covered up by certain layers of material energy depending on the karma. So, therefore, well, I felt that we, you know, Maharaj Pariksit, he came across, this is the first instance that I can remember where Kali had appeared by that time. We were just beginning the Kali Yuga. I think he was the grandson of the Pandavas. He was Abhimanyu's son, right? Was Abhimanyu his father? Anyway, he was the grandson of the Pandavas, and he was in line to. So many Kshatriyas were killed in the battle that ultimately he became the king. And of course, I know everybody. You may know he was ultimately cursed. I don't know why this keeps coming up, but he was cursed by a brahmana to be bitten by a snake and give up his body. And instead of, he could have counteracted the curse, but he didn't. He just accepted it, and that's how, where we get the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is a conversation between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit when he went to the forest, fasted, waited for death, heard the Bhagavatam, left his body, etc., etc. So he was the first one that came across Kali, and Kali was about to slaughter or kill a bull, I think it was. And the bull represents dharma, religious principles, and the cow represents the earth and nature and our mother. So he came and he was going to kill Kali. He was going to chop his head off right on the spot. That's how offensive animal slaughter is. So in your lifetime, not mine, in 20 years, you'll see that this animal rights issue will explode. It's going to explode. It's a time bomb. Just the other day, the big story was red meat will kill you. If you eat red meat, you're going to die. Now, on a web page that I happen to see, the scientists, who are great friends, the scientists, had another article, how to eat meat safely. You know, so the scientists do three things. They create weapons of mass destruction. They try to convince everybody that we're here by chance and evolution and there's no God and et cetera, et cetera. And then they try to teach everybody how to squeeze every ounce of sense gratification out of this body up until the instant of death. And then, therefore, we have Viagra and all these other pharmaceuticals that do nothing else but promote more sense gratification. So Maharaj Pariksit was a great, great devotee. He didn't need to figure out how to solve the gas crisis, which is another story why climate change, which the right-wingers say doesn't exist, but usually about this time of the year in Gainesville, we used to be freezing, and I'm sure, I don't know, I haven't put on a coat since I've been here. But there's no such thing as climate change, you understand. That doesn't exist. Because even though they're taking all this oil and all this stuff out of the earth, Prabhupada explains that the earth is like a satellite. It's a very delicate, finely tuned instrument. How are these planets floating in outer space? without just all being pulled into the sun and burning up, which does happen eventually with Lord Shiva and the time of destruction, and everything's wound up. But Prabhupada said, it says in the Bhagavatam, well, if you keep taking all this oil and gas out of the water and all these things out of the earth, I mean, then what's going to happen? Something is going to happen to the balance of nature. And we're seeing that occur in terms of these climatic changes, because the earth is just being, you change that Krishna's arrangement by one, what's the word, millimeter or something like that, and it's going to have an impact. And we've been taught in the time of Maharaj Prithu that the clean water was everything, clean air was everywhere, jewels and gold, you could go down and just pick them up off the ground, food and mangoes and fruits would just grow freely everywhere. Nature just provided every necessity of life. You didn't even have to have a house. You could just walk down the road and pick a mango, the smooth, sweet kind, not the stringy kinds from some countries, which you can't eat. Florida has the best mangoes, by the way. Even better than Hawaii. I made the comparison test. Yes, better than Hawaii down in South Florida. And I brought mangoes to Prabhupada one time when he was in Chicago. I went down to the groves and homestead. They let me take mangoes, and Prabhupada liked mangoes very much. So I know that time is up. I'll just stop there, and if anybody has any quick questions, I'll be glad to see if I can answer them. And therefore, Prabhupada created, we created our own political party called the In God We Trust Party. It was a separate political party. And the way I got on the ballot is we went out and got signatures. You get a certain number of signatures, that's how you got on the ballot. We would not go through the established political parties. Now, sometimes you get distracted because it's such a powerful environment. And therefore, Prabhupada, as I mentioned but didn't finish, he would warn us in every letter, it is a filthy atmosphere. Therefore, you must keep yourselves pure. Go to Mangal Arati, chant your rounds, go to Bhagavatam class, follow all the principles. He warned us to maintain our purity if we were going to do that kind of service, because it's very seductive. It's very seductive. And if you are in that environment, and that's why I say Brahmatirtha is a... We don't know who Brahmatirtha is. We can't imagine how advanced he must be to do the service that he does and be the great, simultaneously be such a great devotee and such an advanced senior devotee. And everybody knows this. All over ISKCON, everybody knows how advanced Brahmatirtha is, because no one could do what he could do. And his Jewish heritage doesn't hurt either. But that combination is lethal. You take his cultural identity and you combine that with Krishna consciousness, and he's a Rajarshi. He cannot be defeated. Just like he fought Walmart for so many years. Walmart, the biggest corporation in the world practically, the richest Fortune 500, and they, Brahmatirtha, single-handedly kept them out of Alachua County. Now, who other than a descendant of Mahaprika could do that? And he does it without compromising. They all know he's a devotee, and he preaches to them. Token. But he's acting as a Kshatriya. He's not acting as a Brahmin. So therefore, you know, he can take money. There's no problem with the Kshatriyas or householders supporting themselves. It's the Brahmanas that give the advice so they don't have a conflict of interest. And, you know, all the advisors nowadays are are paid, and they all make money on the thing. But he, just the way he lives, he doesn't spend his money lavishly. He's not a sense gratifier. He's not driving around in a Ferrari. He's not dressing in Armani suits, which I don't know. They're kind of narrow. I'm not sure you could get into one. They're very tapered. I've tried, you know, so I know from personal experience. So he's, rather than myself, as an example of how to do it. But Prabhupada, getting back to your point, we had our own party. Yes, he gave us that name, the In God We Trust Party. And then, of course, Balavanta Prabhu, who you all know, he was the one that got all the recognition from Prabhupada. He got, because he was advanced, and he was, Prabhupada liked him very much, even though I was the first one. But, you know, if you were in Gainesville in those days, nobody cared about us until Gayatri invented Garunga potatoes and crispy cauliflower pakoras with... What's that? Yes. No, but I have to. There's a caveat. We were in Dallas in 1972, where there was a little period where we had to shut down the temple for a while, and the original recipe was for yogurt and some other stuff, and the temple ran out of yogurt, so Gayatri looked in the refrigerator. There's all this sour cream. She had this knack for spicing, so she took the sour cream and the ghee and the butter and the spicing, and that became what we now know to be Garunga potatoes. So she invented that. The cauliflower pakoras, we would break up the cauliflower flour by flour, no knife. If the flour happened to be that big, well, so be it. That's how big the pakora was. And many a traveling party, including Vishnu John Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Radha Damodar, thought that they were in a horde of Brahmacharis thought that they were going to. There was nothing that could be cooked that could defeat their ability to consume any amount of prasadam, and they learned that lesson very quickly. When Vishnu John Maharaj was moaning and groaning on the ground in the backyard of Depot, holding his stomach, then we made our point. So this is the program, and personally, my focus was always on the college preaching, always on the campus, even the farm. Not to create any controversies, again, everything is developed according to Krishna's plan, but the way Kalakanta Prabhu has got the spirit of the Plaza program captured again, we're preaching and cultivating students and a way to attract people to our movement through something that they get addicted to every day, and they have to have that prasadam, and then one thing leads to another, is what the original mission of Gainesville was. And that's what brought Prabhupada to Gainesville. Not a farm project, but the opportunity to speak to the intelligent class of men, which he always identified as the college students. He loved association with professors. Publishing his books was his greatest... Every time a new book came out, there was nothing that was more pleasing to Prabhupada than when his books were published. And one last story, I promise, that's it. I'm going to quit. I was in New Vrindavan in 1972. A reporter from the New York Times had come down for the Janmashtami festival, and Prabhupada was there, and devotees from all over the East Coast converged on New Vrindavan under the most... I'd say conditions like India in 1960 or something, when we first went to Fogel Ashram and so forth. It was quite austere, but because Prabhupada was there, we didn't feel the austerity. We didn't even notice the austerity. And reporter came down from the New York Times, and they were having a darshan, and I was fortunate enough to be there. And he said to the – and this reporter liked us, and for some reason the New York Times had this – special interest in New Vrindavan prior to all of the problems later on. And Prabhupada said, yes, I have seen your paper. It is so thick. But what do they do with it after they finish? They throw it in the garbage. And at that time, the Macmillan Gita, the big Macmillan Gita, had just been published, and it was on Prabhupada's table. And he put his hand on it with such love and tenderness. He said, but this Bhagavad Gita, this they will keep forever. And this New York Times reporter just kind of melted in Prabhupada's hands, you know. He just fell in love with Prabhupada by that analogy. So I'll just end on that note. So any other questions? If you've got time, I don't want to interfere with the schedule or anything.